Double J.
With Tim Shiel.
It is my incredible pleasure to welcome Glenn Richards of Augie March to Double J. Glenn, how are you?
Very good. Thank you, Tim. Thank you for having me.
Now, our listeners can't see this, but I can see where you are because we're on a video call. And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that you are in Hobart, where you've lived for a while. Are you in the dark satanic mill right now?
Very much so. And I realised I've just set up a camera for this special occasion. I don't usually do this sort of thing. I'm a phoner guy, but I realise that the light coming in at this point of time in the afternoon is essentially a blinder. So I've had to close everything up. It's literally the dark satanic mill.
The dark satanic mill, which is your studio, I should mention.
It is. Yeah. Why
satanic mill, Glenn? Why dark satanic mill?
I mean, I've been in here for over 10 years, but I think I started calling whatever room I was using wherever I was, which would have been Carlton before I moved here, the Dark Satanic Mill studio. I think it's a line from a poem. I just thought it was clever. And it may have come about because of my first solo record I made with a bunch of guys called the Dark Satanic Mills Brothers. Well, that's what I called them anyway.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. There was some kind of joke there originally. I've forgotten what it is. It's obviously not a very good one.
There it is. There's the the self-defacing. Yes, I love it. I love it. Glenn Richards, we're going to talk about the new album, but first, I have cheekily already played one of your songs in the show today. Like, you've already had an extra go, Glenn.
Wow.
I played this song.
Oh, shit, yes.
Yeah. Vicar and Linda, Pig Face and Calendula, the song you wrote for their album last year.
Terrific stuff.
How did that come about?
That conversation has sort of been going on for a long time because that album, I think, I'm not sure how it worked with those two guys. They've been talking about doing it for a long time, but they also, I think they did a record before it. As well. I think it was just a matter of them having the right number of songs that they really dug. And I knew a lot of the people who were working on the record with them. And it was always going to happen. I was just really happy to find out that a couple of my songs ended up being chosen. So that was actually a really nice Tassie moment because Benny Salter, who lives here as well, got his track on it, which is the highlight of the record. So that was a nice day when we both found out about that because it was sort of a little bit secret until the whole thing was really done.
Yeah, right. Everyone sort of puts their songs in and then Vicar and Linda pick them and then you find out later you made the cut. Well, you got picked for the team.
I think that's, whether it was by, by accident that it happened that way, but it kind of did. So it was nice, yeah.
This Vicar and Linda album last year was actually also a feature album on Double J, and we got Vicar and Linda to record little messages about every song, and I thought you might want to hear what they recorded about this one here.
What a ripper. I like this song a lot.
This is the only song we fought over, isn't it?
Oh, it's the only song. Oh, I just wanted to sing it so bad, and Linda wouldn't let me. She got, nah, it's my song.
It was written by Glenn Richards. Glenn Richards is such a talent, and so we didn't want to let him down. But it's about two plants in the bottom of the garden, the Pigface and Calendula, who are in the dark. They get overlooked, but then they somehow survive. And I just think that that's a cool sentiment. I don't need the sun, need the sun, need the sun. I don't need the light of the world. That's a great way to sing a song about plants.
A song about plants. How good is that? You know, Vicar and Linda,
the best.
I just love that you got Vicar and Linda to sing "The Delicate Calendula is Finding Existence is Hard."
Oh, God. I think I was, I remember precisely where I was when I got the idea for that song.
Right.
I won't go too far into it, but it's just, it was a strong It was at a friend's house, and I was getting drunk in their backyard with them. And I asked them about the, because it was such an overgrown backyard and one of those typical share house, you know, couldn't give a staff sort of backyards. And I wanted to know what these particular plants that, that seemed to be dominating were all about. And that's where that one came from. But gee, they did a great job of it. And the other one as well.
Yeah. We should also quickly chat about Sunset Studies, because so many Double J listeners, many Augie March fans still have a warm place in their heart for the debut record. Debut albums often sort of have that, like that first love sure. mentality, don't they? And you guys have been trying to put on anniversary shows now for a couple of years. And how's it looking? Because I know you've got it lined up for March and April, a few shows lined up. How's that looking at the moment?
Yes, true. We're looking pretty good in Melbourne. Sydney, there's plenty of tickets left, but we're still we haven't really done that much on the in the way of promoting them. I don't know if I'm speaking out of school, but we're really lucky and very happy to have an old friend Sally Seltman join us in Sydney and Canberra. So we're hoping that people will get along, and I mean, I can understand if, you know, people are reticent or just not trusting that, you know, that the thing's actually going to come off, because as you say, twice we've tried and twice we've, you know, failed. I guess the second time we were deeply unlucky. We played the first show in Melbourne, and that night, you know, after finishing the show, found out that that there was another lockdown coming. Mm. So we've, you know, but I think this time around there's really, I mean, we've got to do it. It's not like there's going to be a, you know, another lockdown, surely. But
time will tell. And if you're celebrating the 20th anniversary of this record at its 30th anniversary, I think people will still be okay with that.
Well, this is it. I think it's 22 now. I don't
know. My goodness. I wanted to ask you a couple of things about this record that have just always bugged me. It is 76 minutes long. Now, the length of a CD traditionally, I think, is 74 minutes. So I don't know how you did that. Or I think you pushed it to its absolute limit to 80. If CDs were like 3 hours long, would it have been a 3 hour? Like, were you setting that as your goal?
No, that was, I mean, I don't think we actually shaved off anything either. All of those little in-between sections between the songs, and that all could have gone, I'm sure. But it would have reduced the experience, I think. And I think I could be wrong. We probably, what we did was just squash the songs together a little bit and you know, didn't give them that breathing space that most albums have. And it just ended up being so close, and I think that was people were pretty amazed in the industry that somebody actually did that, you know, who wasn't doing ambient or something.
Yeah. We're chatting about Sunset Studies, and one of the songs from this album is in the Hottest 100 Countdown from 2001, that list, which we're revisiting this Sunday, comes in at number 47. And you guys have a history with the Hottest 100 before and after this song, obviously, but I know that this song in particular kind of took on an extra life for really tragic reasons. I remember seeing the film clip for this song, Glenn, There Is No Such Place, and Augie March fans will know this, but Rob Dawson, a close friend of yours and essentially a member of the band, had passed away, and the film clip for this song is such a beautiful tribute to him. And I guess I wanted to ask you whether this song has kind of grown in terms of its meaning for you over the years, or what your kind of response or relationship with this song is now, sure, 20 years later.
Well, I mean, apart from the actual recording of it, which was a nice experience, Rob and I doing it, we're actually in at the ABC studios, and we kind of did it live and you know, without much messing around. For me, it's always in a share house in Clifton Hill, where it might have been my brother's house. They had a piano anyway, and Rob and I kind of nutted out the basics of it there, and that was for me, that is still for me the my memory of that song, what it became, especially live, and as you say, with the clip, is something else for everybody else. And you know, it's still does the trick live. We've played it a number of different ways, but it, you know, as long as we put a bit of soul into it, it tends to bring the house down. So it's a staple for many good reasons, but I have my memory of it.
Blood, Sport and Porn. Glenn, should I even ask about the title, or should we just scoot straight past that?
No, you go right ahead, but I'm enjoying the way that you're saying it. I haven't really... You're putting a space between blood and sport, and now I'm thinking I should have put a comma after blood instead of making it the one word.
Blood, sweat, blood, and tears. Sport, blood, sport, and yes. Porn.
That's much better.
Well, I think
that's what happens.
Blood, Sport brings to mind, what's that guy? Van Damme? Jean-Claude Van Damme? He did a film called Blood, Sport, I think.
I'm not sure that's where the term comes from. But
okay,
yeah.
All right, fine, Glenn. Sorry, I know. I know you know these things. The new record, like many albums and music made in the last couple of years, it is threaded with the story of the pandemic. From what I understand, you guys sort of had gotten some songs together with the intention of finishing them. COVID just sort of knocked it out of the way. And then you have decided essentially to finish it off yourself in the Dark Satanic Mill, your home studio, which is also where you made your solo album last year, right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. So without doing that solo album, do you think you would have had the confidence to finish off this record, you know, essentially yourself?
No, not really. It didn't have much to do with that. I think, you know, in a way I was kind of relieved to not have to continue on with the Augie record, because what we had was sort of, you know, it was just the beginning of, and it was going to be a lot of work if we couldn't get back together and do more, you know, more sort of in the room together sort of stuff. And so doing the solo record was a bit of a release for me. It was, you know, it was more fun, and it was new and vital, and so I had to do that. And it was only sort of late last year, or sort of I guess halfway through last year, that I was able to look at the Augie stuff. It was genuinely a case of first day of January. I flew into Melbourne from Sydney. We got into the studio, spent 4 or 5 days just sort of hammering out as much as we could. And then within whenever it came down, you know, that was, everybody had the same experience. Slowly you begin to realize that everything you started is essentially, you know, worthless to a degree, and it's not going to, or it's just not going to be realized in the way that you imagined it would. And that was just the beginning of things, really. So I just figured that, you know, this could go on for another year. We're talking about a pandemic, not just something that's, you know, blowing through for a couple of years, as we're finding out. So I figured I've got to give this thing a chance. And you know, it was 50% labor of love, 50% forced labor. And
right.
it wasn't, you know, I wouldn't say it was entirely pleasant to do, but it's, I'm glad that I did it.
Yeah. Well, we're enjoying the fruits of your forced labor. It doesn't sound anything like that. I wanted to dig in on a couple of the songs. So many great songs on this record, as there always is on an Augie March album. But this one, The Animals, I feel like, you know, I don't want to embarrass you, but one of the amazing things about your lyrics, Glenn, is that you can go from this poetic, maybe even sort of labyrinthine sense of lyricism that is sometimes, you know, purposefully a little bit difficult to pass, to lyrics that just cut straight through, whether it's to an emotion or a message. And this song, The Animals, I mean, I don't think I've heard a song quite like it. If you don't mind me reciting some of your lyrics back to you.
Sure.
All the beasts of the earth and the sky, seems like we're here just to make you die, bake you into a murderous pie and fry you on a stick. Now, I don't think anyone's going to be able to tuck into a steak after listening to this song. Was that the intention, Glenn? Like,
without hearing the song and hearing the lyrics in context, it's pretty funny. I mean, and it's also... But it's also, you know, it's
you paint
true.
This. You paint in this song. You paint a really visceral picture of, yeah. you know, what needs to happen in order for meat eaters to eat meat. And it's I've never heard anything like it, Glenn.
Well, it's not. I mean, it's us as you know, as a as a species. You know, as this incredibly voracious and kind of ruthless species. It's. You know, it's coming to a head, and it's. I'm just sort of stating it in a kind of a comical fashion, and hence the ridiculous synthesizer lead.
Yeah.
You know, I like to distract from what's going on in the brain box with these little fruity things that I can do on the synthesizer. And I think it worked with this one. If you hear it, like I say, in context,
yeah,
it's quite lighthearted, but it's definitely in the meat is murder sort of category of the you know the. Songwriting yeah. supermarket.
Let's have a listen. Murder is pie, fry you onto a stick. Every living thing with which the water teems. In the cloud of our legion latrines. In the nets of our trolling machines. In the plastic submarine.
Just listening to it now, it's, I also recall that, you know, quite a lot of those lines begin with lines out of the Bible as well.
Right.
And the song begins with a pretty choice quote from the Bible. I just, for some reason, found I don't know why I would have been reading or looking for that sort of thing, but it gave me good, you know, beginnings. Each verse kind of kicks off with the dose of hypocrisy and you know, good sense if you read it the right way, and you know, like a PM would tell you if you read the Bible in the right way, you know, there's always good sense. If it's just a matter of picking and choosing it.
It is an enduring influence on me and inspiration on me because of that fire and that truth to the word.
Music makes you.
There's just so much beauty in this record. I just want to take this album and go and deliver it to everybody's house. Double J.